You know, the online world is great for so many things. It's great for making you laugh, it's great for entertainment, and every now and again you come across ideas or people that literally blow your mind. But I still think some of my best thinking happens offline. So join me, Nessa, on Offline Thoughts as I chat about some of the things I think about when I'm not online. I'm really glad you're listening, and I hope you enjoy the episode. So welcome to today's episode, and I have to say I'm actually super excited about this episode because it's really satisfying when you theorize about something and then with the fullness of time you end up being like proven to be correct. So I had an episode on Elon Musk where I was specifically speculating that he was like an avid rampant racist just because of like other things that he had said and done in the past, and also because of just his background having been raised in apartheid South Africa. And then, you know, color me not surprised, this week, like literally the day that Donald Trump became president again, he's on stage like thanking the supporters that voted for him. And then, like, in a burst of, like, uncharacteristic energy, he does a Nazi salute to the audience. He does it once and, like, pounds his chest, like, really aggressively. And then he turns around and does it to the people that he wasn't facing before. So he does it twice, and he does it with, like, such energy that you can tell it was pre-planned. You can tell that he was, like, exuberant about performing it. And then you could tell as well that he was spurred on the first time he did it. So the first time he does it, the crowd literally starts cheering because they recognize what he's doing. And then the second time he does it, you know, as enthusiastically because he's already received, you know, approval for having done it the first time. I have to say, I didn't think it would be within my lifetime that I would see like the Nazi salute being done on stage in support of like an incoming president, especially by somebody who was like integral to that president getting reelected. So it's satisfying, not because I enjoy seeing things like that, because honestly, it's a really terrifying prelude into what is going to come down the line, what is already coming down the line. But I think in many respects, we should be not happy, but thankful, maybe is the word, that there is no room for ambiguity. And I say that because a lot of the time, especially over the past, I would say, 8-9 years, probably since like the 2016 election when Trump first ran. Actually, that's like slightly incorrect. He actually ran for the first time in the year 2000, and he had like a very short-lived like campaign. But ever since he entered the national stage as like a candidate for presidency, we have been like so gaslit. Like, he says and does the most racist, outrageous things. And time and time again, we were convinced that we shouldn't take it seriously, that he didn't really mean it, that he didn't really know what he was saying, that he was basically like a fumbling fool that said outrageous and irresponsible comments, but that he did so like unknowingly. And basically, like, that's what they want us to believe of Elon Musk's Nazi salute as well. So, like, the first thing that major media outlets were trying to say was that it wasn't a Nazi salute. Like, what we see wasn't a Nazi salute. So forget all the documentaries you have watched on Nazi Germany and the times that you have seen, like, SS soldiers marching in unison and doing that same action. They were saying, like, that's not what you saw. They were saying that this was a Roman salute. Now, even on a basic level, it's unclear why Elon Musk would believe that the general public would know what a Roman salute is. And honestly, even these media outlets, you can tell this is the first time they've ever heard of a Roman salute. So we are supposed to like go and find the most obscure explanation instead of going to what is the most obvious and like true answer, that he was doing exactly what we think he was doing. And we also know, by the way, that 100%, even outside trusting our own eyes, the German state has censored the action on their TV. So they're not even showing the salute that he did because it's a crime in Germany to do the Nazi salute. So them censoring it already confirms what we know, in that it was exactly what he was doing. Elon Musk himself is not exactly like trying to distance himself from any allegations of racism. One, it's very difficult because literally if you go onto his Twitter page and look at his Twitter ramblings, like every third post is something racist, something against black people or Mexican people or immigrants at large, or talking about like falling white birth rates and how the white population is under attack. So there's no ambiguity about where he stands on things. It's just that we are constantly gaslit into believing that, like Trump, the things that he says and the things that he does shouldn't be taken seriously because he doesn't know what he's saying. Or even if he knows what he's saying, he's only doing it to like garner attention and garner social media attention so that people go onto his platform. But I honestly think that people who are saying these things, who are making these apologies for somebody who has not apologized, who is not sorry, and who does not distance himself from these actions, are people who probably believe similar things that Elon Musk and Trump like clearly believe. When you go onto the record of Elon Musk, and by the way, he loves the media, so there's like loads of things out there, like loads of remarks he's made, lots of statements he's made, interviews he's given, as recently as literally like 2 weeks ago. You see that he is literally obsessed with race. He's obsessed with immigration. He's obsessed with people of color. He's particularly obsessed with pronatalism and the great replacement theory or conspiracy theory. And if you haven't come across those two terms, like pronatalists are basically people who believe in like keeping like the natal or native population's numbers like up. So having as many children as possible to ensure that the population remains a dominant population. And then the great replacement theory is this conspiracy theory that's proposed and like propagated by the far right that basically says that there's a conspiracy out there, a global conspiracy, to replace the white American population with an immigrant population. The reason for this, they say, is that Democrats essentially want to secure their next generations of voters, and they hope that by like allowing immigrants to replace like white native populations, that Democrats are basically trying to cement their future power. So it's like really extreme and really out there. Now, Elon Musk believes this wholeheartedly, and he talks about this all the time, sometimes in overt ways, sometimes in covert ways. Most of the time, it's couched around talks about how civilization is going to collapse if people don't continue to have more babies. But because they also rally against like people of color who have kids, so they're always talking about how like Mexican Americans or Latin Americans or Black Americans have quote unquote too many kids, because they like are really against that. We know that when they are talking about like more people having children, they're specifically talking about the white population having children. They're not advocating for like Latinas or Black people or brown people or immigrant brown populations to have more children. They're specifically saying that they want white women to have white children. And the reason for that is like very simple. Like, they believe that America is a white country. They believe that America belongs to the white population, which when you think about it is actually like an absurd, it's an absurd fascination to have with. And it's also completely illegitimate in the sense that if like America was going to belong to anybody, you would assume that it would belong to the people that they're rallying against. It would belong to like Mexican people. Because literally every other group, the Black population, the white population, the Asian population, every other group is not native to America. Only the Mexican population actually is. I mean, obviously, and like the Native American population as well as we know them. But in terms of like people who have been on the American continent in the territory that is known as the United States now, the people with the greatest claim is clearly Mexican populations. And one of the things that really like disturbs me, I guess you could say, is how they've convinced like Mexican people and other Latin American people that the land doesn't belong to them, that they are immigrants in their own nation, in their own land. And so like for Mexican people who are aware of this, it must be like a real trip to turn on the news every single day and hear like President Trump and Elon Musk and their supporters like foaming at the mouth against like Mexican immigration, when these people are literally all immigrant populations. Like Trump is a European American. Elon Musk is allegedly South African, but obviously he has European origins. That's why he's a white man. So you have like these European Americans who are immigrants to America telling like the native population that have been convinced or coerced into not identifying themselves as the rightful owners of their territory, and they're being told that they don't belong there, that they're an enemy other within that territory. Like, that must be a real trip. It's like it's
it's crazy making. So like outside just like the things that Elon Musk says that are anti-immigrant and anti-people of color and anti-diversity and inclusion, even outside the explicitly racist things that he says, you can tell that he's a racist as well because, and this might seem like it's not connected, but it totally is. He has like a million kids. And you can tell that he has those kids for sinister reasons when you consider a couple of things. One, he's an absent father. Like he has one, even if he was an absent father, it is literally impossible to be a present active father in the lives of 12 to 13 other human beings. There's not enough hours during the week, especially when you're somebody who's like running all these business ventures, who's running Twitter, who's running SpaceX, who's like, you know, also backing the Trump campaign and now is going to be part of the government of Trump's administration. You literally do not have enough time to be a good active present father with that many children and that many responsibilities. So even from the get, we already know that he was never going to be that present in their lives. On top of that, we have corroboration from his daughter, Vivian, who, as I said, is dead to him because she transitioned. And Vivian says in an interview to NBC that her father was only with her and her other siblings, like only 10% of the time during her entire childhood. And she said that even the 10% is super generous. And also he has said in other interviews himself that basically the mothers do all the child rearing or most of the child rearing. And so when you consider that, when you consider that he's a deadbeat by most people's definitions, you then question why he wants to have children, because it obviously isn't because he wants to imbue them with his values, because he wants to like cultivate their personalities and like shape their futures. It isn't that, because he's not around them. On top of that, he has also been the kind of person who has had multiple children at the same time. So I think it's when he was with Grimes or the person before Grimes, the singer, that he had Grimes with one woman whilst having another woman carry his child through IVF. So it's not like he was cheating on her and then he got this other woman pregnant. He intentionally like asked the woman to have another one of his children. So why would he want to have two children at the same time? On top of that, what is the motivation for anybody to have 12 to 13 children? At least like outside the normal spheres that we're used to, like usually when people have a bunch of kids, it's because one, they tend to be poor and there's a connection between poverty and the number of children that you have, partly explained by the lack of like access to like family planning measures. Sometimes it's also people have kids so that they can like support them in their family businesses. So imagine like farmers, for example, that have a lot of space and that's like their way of life. I'm not talking about like uber wealthy, like industrial farmers. I'm talking about like mom and pop farmers. Also in developing countries, like the correlation really is to do with a lack of access to contraceptions. So like when somebody tells you, or when you can tell that somebody has lots of children for like these reasons, or as well sometimes when they're like uber like religious, think of Orthodox Jewish people, or think about Mormons, or think about like other like Christian sects that believe in like traditional patriarchal societies where like mothers stay at home and bear children and fathers go out and like earn the money. Like within these dynamics, often like you're used to seeing like many kids per family or per couple. So that's understandable and that's normal. Elon Musk doesn't fulfill any of that criteria. Like from what we can tell and from his values and morals, we can tell he's not religious. He's never identified publicly with any religious organization. So that automatically tells us that him having kids has nothing to do with like his beliefs. Also, I said about his parenting, his absent parenting style, and the testimony from his children that says he's not a present father. So we also know that he's not having the kids because he loves children and loves spending time with them and loves cultivating their futures and characters and personalities. We also know that he's not having them because he's, you know, trying to guarantee himself like a future labor force within his like small family business, because he can afford to hire literally millions of people. So like by process of elimination and by tying in like what we already know about this guy, by his hyper fixation on the great replacement theory and his like talking about like why people and white families being under attack by talking about how there's a conspiracy, a global conspiracy that is funded by the Democrats somehow to replace the white population with an immigrant population. And also by the way in which he has children. It's not as though like he is going from relationship to relationship or just having like one partner and having lots of kids with them. He's having multiple children. He's getting surrogates to have his children while the woman he's with is also carrying his child. So clearly it's about procreation. That's his fascination. His fascination is with bringing as many children as possible that carry his DNA. We also know that despite what he's saying, so he's talking about like a crisis of fertility, a crisis where the world needs more children. But literally, I was looking this up and the population right now is 8.2 billion people. 25 years ago in the year 2000, the population was 6 billion people. So it's gone up by 2 billion people. It's literally as populous as it has ever been. Like many people say, in fact, we probably have too large of a population in the sense that there are many people, millions of people, billions of people who go hungry every single day. We're experiencing all these issues with climate change and climate disasters. And basically a lot of people believe that that's a consequence of being or having grown in size in terms of the population too quickly and recklessly. So when Elon Musk talks about like this crisis of fertility, and when you see him popping out like 12, 13 kids, or the women that he's with popping out 12, 13 kids and having no plans to stop and advocating for other people to have kids, and by other people, I mean white people, you can clearly see that him having kids is not inconsequential. It's not independent of the other values and racist views that he has. And, you know, one of the first time I remember like making the connection between people who have like a bunch of kids, not like five or six, but like a bunch of kids, like 10 kids, 11 kids, 12 kids, especially when they're wealthy, and especially when like the other conditions that we normally see that drives people to have many kids aren't present. The first time I noticed that was when I was watching this documentary called Our Father that's still on Netflix, which I would totally recommend. And it details the story of this fertility specialist, this man, who basically helped women conceive by inseminating them with like sperm donors. And, you know, by all accounts, he was like a completely respected member of society. Like the women, like he didn't rape them. It's not like he drugged them and raped them. It wasn't like that. I've heard other stories where that's been done. But these were women who were going in for insemination. Like sometimes they were having children with their partners, but their partners were infertile. And so they had to rely on sperm donors. Other times it was women who had gotten to a certain age and they wanted children, even if they didn't have a partner in their lives. So anyway, they went to him because he was like the best in the community, like really well known, really well respected. One of these kids who came into the world as a function of the treatment that her mother had received, like submits her DNA on the platform 23andMe. And she just wanted to see if there's anybody out there who might be related to her that she didn't know about. She ends up receiving hits of half siblings by the dozen. Like she finds 12, then 24, then 40. And overall, like to date, she has already confirmed that she has 94 other half siblings that all were conceived through this clinic. So anyway, what ends up emerging is that this sick bastard was basically inseminating all these women with his own sperm. So the women had chosen sperm donors from like other sperm banks. And they were under the impression that the sperm donors they had selected were the ones that, you know, were being used in their treatment by this doctor. And so obviously when the adult daughter goes on to 23andMe and she finds all these like 94 and growing half siblings, she alerts her mother to what's happened and they quickly piece together what was happening. They end up having to actually do their own investigation because the police wasn't taking their claim seriously. And the thing that struck me about that documentary is that they talked about this organization, this movement called Quiverful, and I've got an article linked if you want to check it out in the episode show notes or the reference section. And the Quiverful movement basically believes in repopulating the earth by having as many children as possible. And there's other similar like movements like Quiverful or other similar organizations, and they all center around the same thing. Basically, the idea that there's a great replacement theory, that the white population is under attack, that they need to replace like the population or add to the population with children of God, quote unquote. And literally, these organizations are almost 99.999% always white, which tells you that there's a racialized component. Also, they use a lot of the justifications that great replacement theorists use, talking about like a crisis of fertility, talking about the population numbers being too low and dwindling, basically saying all the stuff that far right wingers say as like racist dog whistle commentary. So after I learned about Quiverful, I literally saw it everywhere. Because before, I would think to myself, like, why are these like uber wealthy tech billionaires and tech millionaires in Silicon Valley, like, why are they, one, overwhelmingly Republican? And secondly, why are they having so many children, especially in the context of the normal correlation between wealth and the number of children is that it's supposed to be an inverse relationship. The more money you have, the greater your wealth, the fewer children you're supposed to have. And they were almost always exclusively breaking that trend or breaking that expectation. And so when I saw that documentary, I was like, okay, that makes sense. Especially when I thought back to the things that I've heard people like Trump and people like Elon Musk say. Like, clearly there's a connection between those two things, like having a whole bunch of kids when you don't have to or need to, or it's not a requirement, or it's not out of the normal circumstances and conditions that we expect that I described earlier, and also being well off. So honestly, like the next time you see this, the next time you see like an uber wealthy person who has like all these kids, like if you scratch the surface and look at their record of the things they've said and done and the people they associate themselves with and the way that they vote, I guarantee you will find something sinister. So going back to Elon Musk, I already was suspicious of him because he was like a white South African who lived for most of his adult life under apartheid. So I was already suspicious anyway that he wasn't going to have positive values, because the people who would elect to live there, to live in a slave state essentially for much of the time that he lived there, are going to be socially conditioned in very particular ways and very racist ways. So already I was skeptical of him. And then secondly, when you look at his record of the things that he says and does and the way that he votes and the things that he advocates for and who he surrounds himself with, like it's honestly unquestionable. And then on top of that, like learning that he had so many kids and his obsession with the great replacement theory. Well, the great replacement theory is a dead giveaway. Long before he talked explicitly about it or retweeted about it, he actually used like the dog whistle form of it, which is when they talk about like declining birth rates. And so all of this is to say that, you know, honestly, there's always connection or often a connection between people who talk about like birth rates and who have a bunch of kids when they don't need to and when it doesn't make sense. There's often a connection between that and like racist views. Now, outside of all the stuff that he has said, he also, by the way, hasn't limited himself into like interfering with just the US government elections or just US politics. He also is on like a campaign trail of like endorsing like all, like many other far right candidates across Europe. So for example, he endorses the Alternative for Germany party, which is like a far right wing party in Germany. He also has endorsed Viktor Orban of Hungary, who's like definitely a far right candidate. He's also endorsed basically like any far right government, like you'll find his sticky fingers in there somehow, which tells you that one, he really believes in what he says. And so like in the context where we're talking about the salute, like it isn't a haphazard thing, it isn't accidental. And then also that he's clearly trying to consolidate his political power. He obviously is trying to build a coalition of like far right political supporters for whatever plan he has coming down the line, which I will talk about a little bit later on. Right now, like at this point of history, it's literally impossible to talk about Elon Musk without talking about like Donald Trump. One, because I felt like during the elections we were voting for like President Elon Musk. I honestly felt like he was at times even more visible and more vocal and more central to like the party than Trump was. And I mean, obviously what's going on is they've struck some kind of arrangement for Elon Musk to financially back him, and like people have said he has spent some serious bank on Donald Trump. And the exchange clearly is that Donald Trump has to make Elon Musk more visible on the national stage, which clearly he's fulfilling his end of the bargain. Literally everywhere Donald Trump goes, we see Elon Musk. We see him being more visible than he has ever been. He's even going to be like part of Trump's administration. He's going to be like the general for cost cutting or something. The acronym is something like DOGE. And so when you look even at who Elon Musk associates with, like financially backs, like it's impossible to say that that Nazi salute was not a Nazi salute. Like despite what people try and say, despite people trying to gaslight us about Donald Trump, like we know exactly why the people who vote for him and why he won. Like this guy has gone up against like the most qualified, passionate politicians. I mean, I hate Hillary, like Clinton as well, for like the things that she has advocated for in terms of like increasing the prison population that specifically has targeted and preyed on African-American men and Latino men. But the fact that she lost against Donald Trump, despite being like extremely much more qualified than he was and is, and then the same thing happening to Kamala Harris. And again, you know, as I said in my episode about the elections, I wasn't particularly a big fan. But the fact that this guy won over them, despite his lack of qualifications in the political sphere, at least before he became president the first time, tells you a lot about the true motivations of the people who support him so like fervently, like so viciously, I would even say. And whilst he might have tried to like hide that in the first like run, the first time he ran against like Hillary, I think he also actually ran against Barack Obama. So maybe it was 2008, his first run. Needless to say, like in the fullness of time, we have seen him like come out and proud. Like before, he used to be very covert with the things that he says and does, but now he's like super, he's explicit. Like he's not afraid to hide because he's basically gotten the validation that he can say and do the most racist, disgusting things and still be president. You know, like this guy can have like a rap sheet as long as your arm is long and be like facing legal cases in like multiple jurisdictions, having been found guilty of like sexual assault. He can do no, and still he can make it to the presidential office. So of course this is going to embolden an already racist man. And for the people who say that they voted for him because they've got like anxiety around the economy and they believe that given his business background and his like deal making experience that he's going to like stabilize the economy, like honestly it is so laughable. Like every company that this guy has ever run has always been run unsuccessfully. He's currently facing a lawsuit that he might have to pay nearly $500 million for. I actually think the judge has already judged in favor of the person who brought the claim against Donald Trump. But out of that, he's had to pay $500 million because he misrepresented his finances to get loans. So he pretended he had more money than he did in order for him to get like really high loans. And then also when you think back to his resistance, and really to this day, he's refused to release his full tax returns. He's only given us like a couple of pages from a few years. Even that in itself is an indication of the likely successes of his businesses, because this is one man who is incredibly boastful and like non-timid about showing you how great and how amazing he is. And so what would do that better than showing us his tax returns? Because his tax returns would show us exactly how successful his business ventures were, exactly how much money he really has made. And if he really is like a multi-billionaire, then why not show us those tax returns and revel in the fact that there would be no ambiguity about the true status of his wealth. Clearly the reason he doesn't want to show us those tax returns is because, like other biographers have speculated, like, he's lying. He's lying about the level of success he's enjoyed. Not to say that he's broke, because ultimately the Trump name is the Trump name. He already was born into money. And so you have to work extra hard when you're born a millionaire to, like, lose that money. So chances are that, combined with his name, brand recognition, the fact that he's president, he's never going to be broke, obviously. But that's not the same thing as being, like, this genius businessman who is so, like, successful in business that people who vote for him say that we should, like, ignore his racism, ignore his, like, disgusting behavior, ignore the fact that he runs with people who do the Nazi salute on the national stage because he's going to stabilize the economy. Okay, except that claim doesn't hold up based on all the things that we already know about his business ventures and his income and the financial woes that he faces. The reason why they're voting for him is, like, much more simple than that. They're voting for him because he's going to kick out immigrants. He's going to create a hostile environment for people of color. He's going to roll back on DEI measures, as he's already delivered on that. And he's going to create an environment in which people who have been forced to go into the closet with their racism to come out loud and proud. That's why during, like, the second election run, he didn't want to distance himself from the Proud Boys who are voting for him, that are, like, basically, like, the Ku Klux Klan. He didn't want to, like, and media outlets goaded him. They were like, if you aren't associated with these groups, then why don't you just say so publicly? And he blank out refused to say that because he knows that that's why people are voting for him. So all of this is to say that we shouldn't let Trump voters, Trump apologists, Elon Musk apologists and supporters to continue to gaslight us into not recognizing what is happening in front of us, because we've already had, like, 8-9 years of that with Trump already. And what we see is that when you become an apologist for a regime or for a personality or for a political representative like Trump, or really for anybody with the immense power that these two actors have, their behavior becomes increasingly worse. Like, the trend is upwards, not neutral or downwards. It's only going to continue to embolden their behaviors. And even if we were to believe that the people who voted for Trump and support Trump aren't doing so because Trump allows them and is promising them, like, a return to, like, proud racism, even if we were to believe that extraordinary claim, like, the evidence still tells us that that's a lie. Because, okay, even if it isn't a lie, it's clearly what the people who support him believe. Even if Trump himself doesn't believe that, which he does, the people who support him must believe that, because the FBI, for example, has released a statement that says something to the effect of, Trump, like, this election cycle has corresponded with the second highest ever spikes in hate crimes. So hate crimes are crimes that are motivated by the person or the aggressor, like, hating a characteristic, like an immutable characteristic of the victim. So it's you can punch somebody because you don't like them or because you've had an argument with them, but if you punch them because they're Jewish, then that's a hate crime. Or if you can burn somebody's house down just because you feel like burning somebody's house down, but if you burn their house down because they're Mexican, then it's a hate crime. So the FBI has said the rise in these types of crimes and in hate crimes are the second ever highest on record, and the first highest record, like the highest record on the highest, like, uptick or increase in hate crimes is September 11th. So the day after September 11th, when a lot of brown Muslim people were attacked. So even if Trump himself, like, didn't already say the racist stuff that we know he says and implemented the racist policies that we have seen he's implemented, even if that wasn't the case, we would still see that clearly his supporters don't believe that. There's a reason why these hate crimes have increased, and that's because they believe they are safe to do so. They believe that they are being endorsed or supported in expressing these views and carrying out these sorts of hateful crimes. The Anti-Defamation League also conducted another study that looked at the spike in like violent crimes against people of color. And what they demonstrated was that not just people of color, also like Jewish people, basically like non-white populations that might be the target of like far right Republicans or people who support Trump. They saw that for counties that hosted rallies, like Trump rallies, immediately following that period, all those counties experienced an uptick in hate crimes against marginalized people, essentially. So again, like, maybe Trump himself isn't explicitly telling people to be more racist, but certainly there's a resonance with his message that has incentivized them and emboldened them to be more racist. And again, like I said, he's doing it on purpose. I'm playing devil's advocate, but I'm really not, because there's no ambiguity. There wasn't any ambiguity for me ever, honestly, because one of the things, and I don't know why I knew this as a kid, but one of the first things I knew about Donald Trump that was bad was that during the Central Park Five's investigation, even before, like, there was literally no evidence that they had committed this crime, they were all like young boys. They were like teenagers at the time. He took out like a full page spread advert calling for their execution and saying that basically he was 100%, he was so confident in their guilt, essentially, that he was willing to put where his money was, and he was advocating that they be given the death penalty. And by the way, if you don't know what the Central Park Five case was, it was a case where these five teenage boys were accused of sexually assaulting a jogger who was jogging in the park in the morning in Central Park. And the reason why the case became infamous was because these boys, without any evidence that they did this crime, were taken into police custody without the consent of their parents, without a guardian present, without like a lawyer present. And they were basically interrogated for like hours and hours and hours. And they experienced like physical abuse at the hands of the police officers, who basically like coerced them into confessing to a crime they didn't commit. Like, they ended up going to prison, and then after some time, it emerged that they hadn't committed the crime when new evidence emerged. Also, by the way, the jogger at the time, like, said that she didn't think it was them, but they were just so hellbent on, like, convicting these teenage boys that they basically, like, engaged in criminal behavior, quite frankly, to get the conviction, to get them to confess. There's actually a Netflix documentary about it, but I just can't bring myself to watch it. Like, I feel like it happened a long time ago, but I feel like I'm not ready to see it. Anyway, that being said, like, that's one of the things that I always thought about Trump. And then as I grew older, obviously loads of things have emerged since then, like his practices with his apartment complexes where he didn't like rent out to black people. And then, of course, you know, all the things that we have seen during like the four times that he has run for a president. So honestly, like, has been a bad dude for a long time. And so because we know this, we know then that the claim that people make that they're like, that they don't see like Trump's racism, that they don't see the things that he's doing as being racist, that they don't see that he's specifically targeting people of color, like, they are lying. It reminds me of like this episode of Black Mirror, where it's like in the last season. I think Black Mirror is still on Netflix, but it's a great series. And it features, and it's actually loosely based on British politics. It's based on this politician called Enoch Powell, who gave like this infamous speech called The River of Blood, where he basically called for like the deportation and like violence against like people of color. Specifically, I think he was talking about the West Indian people, like black people in the UK. Anyway, in the episode of Black Mirror, the politician goes around, but he's one of those really charming racists. Like, he's not like Trump, who's just like out and out with it, where it's difficult to even enter certain rooms without like feeling like the air change because people know exactly what he is. This politician in this series, in the Black Mirror episode, is closer to like Mitt Romney. And the thing about Mitt Romney is that he was very charming in the time that he ran. Like, he wouldn't say explicitly racist things. He would say covert racist things. So one of the things that ended his election was when like a staff member, like a waiting staff member at a function that he was at, secretly recorded him. And he recorded Mitt Romney saying something like there's 47% of the population that basically are leeches and these people don't pay taxes, they don't contribute to our economy, and I don't care about those people, I'm not going to be their president. And by the way, when he talks about this 47%, like, he's talking about veterans, he's talking about the elderly, he's talking about children, he's talking about people on disabilities, he's talking about poor people. So he was caught on tape saying like really vile things. That was shocking because in public he was so charming. So going back to the Black Mirror episode, this politician that's depicted is charming. He says the right things, like Mitt Romney. He does the right things. He smiles. He like hugs babies. He makes like covert statements, but nothing you could ever pin him on. And one of his supporters who had an understanding that, you know, he was racist, gets angry with him. And she confronts him and she's like, why are you being nice to these people? Why are you smiling at these people? Why are you shaking their hands and engaging in conversation? Why are you saying why are you not saying the things that I expect you to say? Basically, why are you not saying the kinds of things that Trump would say, is what she's saying. And it's really creepy because the politician like turns to her and suddenly his like charming smile fades and he looks deeply into her eyes and there's like darkness in his eyes as he says this. And he says something like, I don't need to tell you explicitly who I'm really standing for, what I'm going to do when I'm in power, because the people who know, i.e. you know what I really am, and I basically have to masquerade in public so that I could get into power, but make no mistakes that I am what you think I am. I.e. he's saying that like he has to take the Mitt Romney like angle. He has to take like the Bill Clinton angle. He's like a monster that basically can carry out his monstrosity by being charming to deceive the public. All of this is to say that Trump is not any of those things. like even by any metric, like there is no ambiguity. Even when politicians are like racist politicians, I think about like how savvy, when you watch like old footage of Ronald Reagan, how charming and charismatic and covert he is. You can be excused and forgiven for not knowing like what his true feelings were about like people of color, for example, BTW, they were horrible. Because in public, he was like this charming person. Like he was the character depicted in the Black Mirror episode. With Trump and Elon Musk now, by extension, the people who support them are trying to like make us like forget the fact that we hear them speak for themselves every single day and make statements and pronouncements that leave no room for imagination. There's no covertness. There's no hiding. There's no dog whistle politics. It's literally in our faces. And if it wasn't already in our faces, which it was, like one of the first things that this guy has done, Trump has done after coming into office, was he has signed presidential pardons for 1,500 people, 1,500 people that were involved in the Capitol riots of 2021. So the people who staged the insurrection, who tried to take the government by force when Trump was telling them that the election had been rigged and had been stolen from them, those people who literally committed treason and insurrection are the first people he pardons. And he pardons them specifically because, like, they are his base. They are his racist base. And we know explicitly that they are his racist base because research undertaken, I think it was by Brookings Institute or another think tank like that, I read this in Al Jazeera, found that of the 1,500 people that went there to like take the Capitol Hill building, they found that 46 individual far-right organizations were involved in the riots. So people from 46 different organizations were all represented within the 1,500 people who were there. And when I say far-right, I'm not talking about people who are just like conservative. I don't consider that far-right. They're just conservative people, and that's fine. I'm talking about like Nazi-level, far-right, Proud Boys, like type of organizations. And so for him, Donald Trump, for him to forgive and give a presidential pardon to 1,500 of those people as his very first order of business when he gets back into office, like should tell you like the seriousness of the situation should tell you about his commitment to these people and to this base, and should like remove all doubt that what we already knew is true, that he's a racist, that he runs with like far right extreme groups, that he's being endorsed by these organizations because they support each other. Like all that ambiguity should be completely gone. Now, outside me just saying in different ways for like 45 minutes how both like Trump and Elon Musk are racist, like what are my key takeaways? Well, one of the key takeaways I had is when I considered the response by the Anti-Defamation League, which represent like Jewish interests and advocate for Jewish rights and advocate against anti-Semitism. I was really surprised at their response. So the video comes out of this guy doing the Nazi salute. And the first thing that they say is that we should give Elon Musk the benefit of the doubt, that we shouldn't jump to conclusions, that maybe it is a Roman salute, that we should basically withhold judgment, which is very strange because, you know, Germany, like the country where obviously Nazism originated and took root, literally came out and they were like, we're not even going to show this on our screens because it is 100% anti-Semitic. It is 100% the Nazi salute. So for the Anti-Defamation League to come out and essentially defend Elon Musk's like explicit action was really disappointing and has raised like a question mark for me. Like I'm definitely going to look into them a little bit further, especially when you consider how like vocal they were against Kanye West and his anti-Semitism, which doesn't touch anywhere near the level of anti-Semitism we saw from Elon Musk. And then it wasn't until later on when Elon Musk goes onto Twitter, and then because he's been clearly like emboldened by the Anti-Defamation League, like essentially standing up for him, he goes on to make all these like anti-Semitic jokes online, these Nazi jokes online, these Hitler jokes online. And it's only after Elon Musk has posted like 10 times with these types of jokes that they then take a stance against him and say that what he's doing is anti-Semitic. So I was surprised that it took so much and that it was the lesser actions. Not that it's lesser, it's still disgusting, but I was surprised to see that it was the less inflammatory like decisions or actions that they condemned. And again, like I said, like I'm definitely going to investigate a little bit further. My other takeaway was for me, like when I saw that Nazi salute, like especially twice, what the first thing that came to me was like, this is clearly racial provocation. Like they know that it is going to shock, incense, cause fear, cause panic, cause fury. And they're doing it on purpose because they want to provoke the public. They want to provoke media outlets into covering the story. They want to basically rile up their base so that their base, you know, becomes more engaged and active and vocal. Like for me, I saw it as an act of aggression, like the first act of aggression in what is surely going to be many other such actions down the line. And with this Nazi salute done on the inauguration day of President Trump, like that is testing the limits of what the public can take, you know? It's like a prelude to more extremism, because if he can stand on stage in front of like millions of people, like watching at home, and hundreds if not thousands of people who were in that auditorium at like watching him on that stage, and do like carry out an action like the Nazi salute that is banned in like Germany, and that we all recognize it to be a Nazi salute and not like what they try to like play it off as a Roman salute. To me, like, yeah, no, they're testing the limits big time, and there's definitely more to come, like more sinister stuff to come. A part of me thinks that they are trying to fulfill their base's desire, and that base's desire being like triggering a race war. Because when you are in online forums, like they are gagging. They are gagging for the day when there should be a race war, because these people have already been like stockpiling weapons. Like there are literally locations. So sometimes we imagine when we talk about like gun ownership that it's just like individual men, because it's mostly men, who like buy like multiple weapons, like might have like 3, 4, 5 guns. But it's not just that it's concentrated in the hands of individuals. It's also that they're literally hiding them at various locations. Like, they're stockpiling them at strategic places so that in the case of like an oncoming race war, they can basically be well prepared. Like, these people have been planning and preparing for an eventuality where they would have somebody like Donald Trump in power, supported by this billionaire class that we are seeing coming into the administration, who openly endorse, espouse, and support like anti-immigration, not just anti-immigration, but like aggressive, violent anti-immigration rhetoric, as well as like open contempt for civil liberties as they pertain to people of color in the country. Like, they've been, this is basically for them like the sign of the second coming. Another part of me thinks that all of this is like a distraction by like the wealthy class, like the capitalist class, the billionaire class, to sort of like distract like the poor masses by making like immigrants the focus of like their anger, their frustration, their hatred. So that, especially in the context of what has just happened or recently happened with the execution of the United Healthcare CEO by Luigi Mangione, which I did an episode on, by the way, if you haven't seen that already. Like, in the context of like rising inequality and rising frustrations and people being vocal about like who they blame, like how often do we hear about the top 10%, about the 1% that are leeches on society, that are taking more than their fair share, that are creating all these harms and ills in society? I genuinely feel like there were times when we didn't know who the villain of the story was. We didn't understand the relationship between the uber wealth of some people, that it corresponds with the poverty of others, that those two relationships are related, that you can't have one without the other, and that one feeds off of the other. I feel like we're hyper aware of that now. And so sometimes when I'm looking at, especially countries that are going through economic turmoil or financial duress of some kind, as the US is, as many European countries are, like, it's a well tried and tested like a strategy or tactic to focus the angry masses, the potentially angry masses, not on their own government's failure to deliver like sound economic policies, sustainable economic policies, and instead to focus them on like being angry at an external reason or an external group of people that they can blame basically for the current situation that the country faces. And really, especially because we've been specifically talking about Elon Musk and his Nazi salute, like, part of his tactic, part of the Trump administration's tactic, is so unoriginal. And the reason why we should be concerned and should be scared and should see this as an escalation in the kinds of extremism that we're going to see, and that there's a risk of this may turn, like, translate into actual physical violence, is that this is literally what the Nazi party did in World War II or pre-World War II Germany. Literally, Germany was coming out of the loss of World War I, where the country was essentially like economically devastated because part of the agreement or part of the concessions that they had to make as part of accepting defeat in World War I was that they had to pay a whole bunch of money, a whole lot of reparations to the winners of the war. And actually, I just quickly looked up the sum that they paid just to remind myself. And they had to pay $33 billion. So what is the equivalent of $33 billion back in 1919? And this is in the context of, they had just come out of a very expensive war and their economy was already under financial duress. And this money was so significant at the time that it basically plunged your economy into free fall. And it wasn't even until like 2010 that they finished making the final payments of part of those reparations from World War I. And so what the government did, what the German state did, because the country was undergoing such economic duress and there was like mass unemployment, there was like huge fury and frustration that, you know, could have been turned against the government or destabilized the government, they basically made Jewish people like the the scapegoats. So they blamed them for absolutely everything. They said the reason why there's unemployment is because of them. The reason why the German people were suffering was because of them. They tried to characterize them as being like leeches on the system who basically were making all this money and preventing like everyday ordinary German people from getting their fair share. And they proposed the solution as we know now to basically rid Germany of like this foreign other presence that was like the root cause of all their problems. This is literally what the American government is doing right now. When we see Donald Trump running around with like far right extremist groups, and we see Elon Musk doing the Nazi salute on stage, when we see within days of Donald Trump re-entering the US government, rolling back civil rights era legislation and revoking or undoing like legislation and policies that have been put in place to protect the interests of the disadvantaged in the context of the US, it's people of color. When you see all of that happening, in addition to what I've already discussed earlier in the episode, in terms of like the uptick in hate crimes whilst Donald Trump was running through the campaign and in counties that he visits and rallies that he holds, all that should be really alarming to all of us. Like they're following a well tried and tested pattern of behavior. And that pattern of behavior isn't just symbolic. Like I was reading earlier today that mass deportations have already begun. Like the first shipment of people that have been shipped, I believe, were Colombians. So right now, Trump is in dispute with the Colombian government because the Colombian government refused to allow 2 military planes carrying like untold numbers of Colombian migrants. They didn't allow them to land because it wasn't a civilian plane. They flew them back in a military plane. And basically the US now is threatening sanctions against Colombia because they wouldn't comply with the receival or the acceptance of these migrants. So literally within days of him coming into office, mass deportations have already begun, like he said. I think this is only the beginning. We're going to see more and more people deported. Another thing that I read that is incredibly terrifying was that one of the other presidential executives that he signed was to repeal the pause that Joe Biden had placed on executions. He's basically repealed that, and he's resumed the executions. And more than that, he has said that he wants to prioritize the execution of people who are currently incarcerated who came into the country illegally. And then he's also said that another priority group for execution is or are people who are in prison for having like caused physical harm or killed or hurt police officers, essentially. And what this whole thing like makes me think is like the thing that I keep thinking is like this is not a drill. It's not a practice run. He's not joking. It's not just like mere symbolism. He's not just trying to toss a few like scraps of things that he promised to his base to like calm them down. This man has nothing to gain and nothing to lose in the sense that he's not like eligible for a third election or a third term. So it's not as though he's like implementing these policies so that he can guarantee himself the next term in office, because that's one of the reasons that people gave for him pursuing his crazy policies like the Muslim ban or trying to erect a wall between the US and Mexico. Like those things don't apply. And so we should look at them through the proper lens. And that lens is that he's doing these things because that's what he wants to do, because it aligns or they align with his values. And he, of course, still wants to make his base happy, but he wants to make his base happy because he aligns with his base. They have supported him. They have carried him into a second term in office, and he wants to show his gratitude to them. He wants to be enshrined in their memories as somebody who delivered on their promises. So we shouldn't sort of like allow ourselves to be lulled into appeasement, essentially, into believing that like all of this is going to slow down, that somebody's going to stop him, or that things can't get any worse, because they're already terrible. They're already terrible. And from what we have seen already, from the energy behind these policies he's passing left, right, and center, like this is literally the beginning. Like first we saw like the Republican Party at large like strip back. I mean, first they were just threatening us. First they were saying that they were going to get rid of Roe v. Wade. And then we were all like skeptical and we basically didn't believe that it was ever possible just because it was such a hard fought battle. And it was so embedded in American culture that we didn't think that it was possible. But guess what? It did happen. They were able to get the Supreme Court to basically reverse Roe v. Wade and make abortions illegal in many states now. And in the states where it isn't illegal, they've made it like virtually impossible, to the extent where when women show up to emergency rooms and they're pregnant, like they're not receiving any care because basically the health centers and the hospitals fear causing harm to the unborn child and potentially having to face consequences, legal consequences for those actions. So they promised to deliver Roe v. Wade, they did. Then they talked about how they were going to implement like mass deportations. They've already started doing that. They talked about how they're going to start tossing like illegal migrants or illegal immigrants into prisons. They've already done that. On top of that, they've ramped it up and said that they're going to start executing these people. They also said that they were going to return to the traditional family, quote unquote, which is always like dog whistle politics to talk about basically rolling back LGBT rights. And we see that that as well has begun. He's already implemented the trans ban in the military. He's already trying to halt like gender affirming care for trans people. And I honestly think this is only the beginning. I do think they're going to try and roll back same-sex marriage eventually, because it literally aligns with what their base wants. Now, all of this leads me to like the final points I'll make before I leave, my final takeaways. The first is that in as much as we are going to hold people like Elon Musk and Donald Trump and his administration and the billionaire club that he surrounded himself in that are passing these horrendous policies accountable, we need to also hold accountable the people who continue to be apologists for Donald Trump and his administration, who continue to try and gaslight us into making us believe or feel like the things that we are seeing with our eyes and hearing with our ears aren't true. Like he says something incredibly racist and dangerous and with malintent behind it, and they tell us that he's only joking, or he says that he's going to like implement mass deportations and then he does, and they tell us that it's not as bad as we think. Or we see Elon Musk, for example, going on stage and doing the Nazi salute in like broad daylight on national television, and the response from his audience is for them to like cheer him on like he's some kind of superhero. And they tell us that we're reading too much into it, that we didn't see what we saw, that what we saw was a Roman salute. We need to stop letting them gaslight us and hold them accountable to their views. Like often we say things like, we shouldn't judge people on the basis of like how they vote politically, or that in general, in everyday life, we shouldn't judge people. We should live and let live and sort of like reserve judgment. I personally disagree with that. I think the way that people vote and the decisions and choices they make are obviously a reflection of their values. And so if they are the people who are aligning themselves with characters like Elon Musk and Donald Trump and his administration and the kinds of policies we've already seen in just this week, as well as, by the way, the kinds of policies we saw in the first time that he ran, the first time he was in office, then there's no reason why we shouldn't be judgmental of them. Like, we do think lesser of them for their choices. We do think that there was a better choice or a better way of voting, and that was voting for the person, even though I didn't like Kamala, who, you know, didn't run on a campaign of mass deportations and anti-immigrant sentiment and scapegoating immigrants for all the country's issues, and who wasn't in different courts literally during his election being taken to court for all kinds of issues, for fraud, for sexual assault, for potentially crimes committed whilst he was in office. They made a choice to vote for him and vote for this administration in the full knowledge of the things that he had done and the things that he had said he was going to do. And so that's not a neutral choice, and that's not a good choice. And that's not a choice that, like, I feel like when we say live and let live, that's like when people make lifestyle decisions. Like maybe somebody's like a minimalist and somebody's a maximalist. And you're like, well, you know, you do what you want. You know, I've got my own way of living. Or maybe somebody lives a more active style and another person kind of likes luxuriating at home or is more sedentary. We're like, well, live and let live. Sure, you can say it in those arenas, but in the arenas where the choices that people make have real life consequences, real negative consequences on other people's life, their opportunities, whether they get to live or die, whether they get to like be with their families or not, whether they are deported or not, whether they are able to lead and enjoy the same kinds of legal protections as other people, like no, like that's not the realm in which we say live and let live, or that we reserve judgment. Like that's the time when we make our voices accountable, because our voices matter, because we actually do have some level of influence over the people around us. Like when something bad happens in your presence and you don't say something, you are creating the conditions under which similar things are going to happen. Or when somebody expresses a terrible view and you don't challenge that view, it emboldens a person and entrenches the idea that that's a socially acceptable thing to say. A simple example is if you hear your brother make a sexist remark and you kind of let it slide and don't say anything to him, well, he's just expressed sexism or misogyny in the presence of a woman, in the presence of somebody who he loves, and that person hasn't checked him. So guess what? Chances are he's going to express those views in other contexts to other people. And the nature of these kinds of things is that they escalate. The more that people like test the waters and they get away with more and more, and they get away with saying things that they kind of suspect is socially unacceptable, but there are no social ramifications to the things they say and do, it emboldens them to act. So I think one of the simple things that we can do in our everyday life is challenge our friends and family that holds these views and that continue to be apologists for Trump and his administration and the Elon Musks of the world. The final thing I'll say is on our attitude towards, like, I feel like in general the wealthy, but in particular like the billionaire class, I often have the feeling that people are so deferential and so forgiving of people like Elon Musk because he has money. Because like my episode on Bill Gates, who like goes around the world like advocating for healthcare policies when he has no healthcare experience whatsoever. He's literally like a tech goon that made all his money in that way. But somehow, because he has money, he's allowed to go and speak on issues that affect people's lives. I feel like it's the same thing with Elon Musk. It's sort of like this guy who's never held any office, who has no political career, who has no political experience, who has no political training whatsoever, somehow is going to be part of the administration at one of the highest levels. Like he's one of the named people in Trump's administration. That is an example of giving wealthy people passes that they don't deserve. It's assuming that because they have money, they must be smart, they must be competent, they must be capable, they must be deserving, when all of these things are not true, particularly where Elon Musk is concerned. If you have ever seen him in interviews, like interviews where he isn't just throwing like softball questions around Tesla or SpaceX or himself, when they ask him about anything real world related, he's illiterate. Like he is unable to form sentences and make like coherent arguments or have coherent conversations when it isn't things that are about him or about his companies. It's the same thing with like this other billionaire villain, Peter Thiel, who's a real creepster. Same with him. Like he has all these billions yet somehow can't string together a sentence. He literally looks like a speaking lizard. So sometimes, and the reason, by the way, why Elon Musk is so big on Twitter is because then he doesn't have to speak. Because whenever you see him speak, especially when it's unscripted, he always comes across so poorly. What was also evident, by the way, in the inauguration was that this guy is always high. Like I've already read like reports about how he really loves to get down, that he's a real like junkie, that he has like a prescription for ketamine, like an ongoing prescription for ketamine. And that he regularly goes to like countries like Amsterdam to like have like huge drug fueled weekends. already knew that already, but during the inauguration, like, go look at the footage where he is basically completely spaced out and clearly like dancing to a rhythm in his own head whilst everybody else is like has the proper emotion and is present in the room. He's like almost like not giggling, but he's like spaced out in his own like mind. You can clearly see that he's on something. So again, like, if anybody else behaved in this way, was unable to express themselves the way you would expect somebody who's like the head of like a multi-million dollar company or number of companies to express themselves, the fact that he can't do these things gives you an indication as to his level of intellect, his level of experience, his level of competence. And we shouldn't just assume that he's a smart guy just because he has money, because ultimately all that tells you about him and people like him who are born into money is that they're born into money. Like, they're born millionaires, they're born with like a silver spoon in their mouths. And so when you are born with millions of dollars already at your disposal, you're basically guaranteed success. And so your success is not a reflection of your capabilities or a reflection of your hard work or a reflection of your it's not a reflection of any of that. It's just a reflection of the fact that you happen to have been born in money. And so I personally would love to see going forward us giving these billionaires the respect that they deserve and the deference that they deserve, which is zero. The only thing that we can know for sure is that they were born into money and they went to the right schools because of their money and they formed the right connections because of their money. They're given the benefit of the doubt because of their money. But we should ultimately judge them on the other actions that we see. In this particular case, like, somebody having money shouldn't trump the fact, pun not intended, shouldn't trump the fact that we see him behaving as a despicable human being. And also, it shouldn't prevent us from seeing that he is a dangerous man. Dangerous because he's willing to do what nobody else is willing to do, which is literally go on stage and do it and perform a Nazi salute to millions of people around the world, like in broad daylight, supposedly sober. And he knows that he can get away with it because he has a lot of money. He essentially bought this president. The only like silver lining for me is that many people speculate that given their personalities, their volatile, like irrational, unstable personalities, that it's only a matter of time before like they fall out, because there was a long time as well when they didn't get along, when they were engaged in like public like spats. I am excited about the day that happens, because it basically is going to make both of them less powerful. Trump will not have access to like the cash cow that is Elon Musk, and Elon Musk won't have like the spotlight that Donald Trump affords him. So I'm really looking forward to that day. So with that, I'm going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. If you're listening on Monday, I'm releasing this literally like 15 minutes before midnight because I had a whole lot of other deadlines I had to do today. But I hope you enjoyed the episode and were able to listen to the very end. I have left a whole bunch of articles you might find interesting in the show notes as usual. And other than that, have a great week and I'll see you again next Monday.